So tonight I want to tell you a bit of a different story. We're moving forward in the history of the people of God again. So we've gone through the period of Abraham when he was the only one of the God's chosen people. We've gone through the period of his descendants when they were slaves in Egypt. We've followed them through the wilderness with the ark and into the promised land. We followed them through moving from judges to kings. And you might kind of guess by this point that things didn't work out well for the people of God with their kings either. You might kind of have noticed that there seems to be this pattern of the people of God looking to the wrong things, looking to their stuff or their power, which is just really just your stuff that makes you strong, or their wealth, which is really just the stuff that makes you be able to buy stuff, more stuff, or whatever. And instead of looking to God, they look to other things. And those other things became idols to them. And sometimes they actually look to more idols. The kings sometimes even led the people of Israel astray. And finally, at one point, they angered God so much that he had to bring down the ultimate punishment on them. And a great empire swept into first the kingdom of Israel, and then another great empire swept into the southern kingdom of Judea, and the people of God were taken captive and held prisoner and relocated from their homes in a strange land. And this is the scene that I want to paint for you at this point, because this is where our story is going to take place. One of the kings under whom the Israelites were taken into captivity was named Ahasuerus. And Ahasuerus ruled over a great empire of 127 provinces, stretching all the way from India down to Ethiopia. And if you know your geography, you'll know that would include the land of Israel, the land of Judea. And the people of God had been taken and dispersed and scattered in this great empire. And Ahasuerus, the great king emperor of this empire, was showing off. Showing off the great riches and the splendor of his kingdom to all the people who were important. He threw this great feast, which lasted for 180 days. And as this feast went on, he brought out more and more and more of his stuff. He made sure there was lots of stuff to eat, lots of stuff to drink, so much stuff that to drink that, in fact, the rule was there is no rule. You just drink as much as you like. And this great extended showing off feast was going to have its ultimate climax in the appearance of King Ahasuerus' beautiful queen, whose name was Vashti. And he had this great banquet thrown, and he summoned his queen, he sent the eunuchs, his servants, out to get her. And they took a rather long time, and they were waiting, and his guests were getting less and less impressed, and he spent all this 180 days trying to impress his guests, and finally he receives word back that Queen Vashti is not coming. King Ahasuerus, ruler of 127 provinces from India to Ethiopia, was absolutely enraged. And he talked to his advisors, and they were outraged on the king's behalf, because you always have to get outraged on the king's behalf, especially if the king is outraged. And they're like, yes, if you allow this to continue, then all the women in the kingdom will just stop listening to their husbands, and it will be a disaster. So you have to put Queen Vashti away and find another queen. The king was angry and upset, so he was quite open to this advice from his advisors. And so he dismissed Queen Vashti. And he declared, I guess it was kind of a great beauty contest, except people didn't really have a choice as to whether or not they participated in it. If you were beautiful and a girl and not taken yet, then you are basically rounded up. Sometimes beauty is a blessing. It's not one that I've had to worry about too much. Sometimes it's a bit of a curse. And in this case, one of the young girls who was rounded up was a beautiful young girl named Esther. Esther was a Jew, one of God's people. She had grown up with her uncle Mordecai, who worked kind of in and around the king's palace. And he had raised her as his own daughter. And then the king's men came and noticed, hey, oh, she's beautiful. She's not taken. We'll take her. Took her off. And Mordecai was concerned for her. So he would go every single day to the gate of the king's court, which was the only place where Esther was allowed to come to, and just check in on her, make sure she's okay. And he told Esther, don't tell anybody your ancestry. Don't tell anybody who you are, where you come from. I mean, you can tell them your name, Esther, but don't tell them any more than that. And Esther, being a thoughtful, brave young lady, said, okay, I won't. And she just participated in this massive, compulsory beauty contest as best she could. And it was a big operation. The king made sure that they had all the cosmetics that they might need, and made sure that there was this beauty regimen that lasted an entire year, certain skin care at this point, and certain hair care at that point, and here's your beautiful clothes, because he wanted to make sure they were all amazingly beautiful, because the king really cared about stuff like that, like being able to show off, you know, I've got this great empire and this beautiful wife, so he wanted the most beautiful one he could possibly get. And Esther's participating in this and basically just doing, yeah, okay, taking people's advice. And as this went on, this kind of horrible precursor to our modern reality TV shows, she gained more and more favor with everybody she met. People were impressed by her beauty, but I suspect also impressed by her inner beauty, by her courage, by her integrity, because all of those things actually combine together to make even the people who, like me, who are not, don't have to deal with the curse of beauty, at least somewhat beautiful to some people. After all, my wife did marry me, so. And Esther ended up the winner of the contest. She was chosen by King Ahasuerus to be his wife. I can only imagine kind of the mixed feelings Esther must have had. She's now the wife of the king of this great empire, so that I guess is good. But she's a wife of somebody who just dismissed the last queen for wanting her to come so he could show her off. So, yeah, I suspect she had some fairly mixed feelings about this whole thing. But she was a wise, thoughtful person and thought, okay, well, where God has placed me, so I'm going to just do the best I can as queen, I guess. And this humility and this beauty endeared her to all around her even more. And Mordecai, her uncle, kept coming to check in on her. He'd come to the castle gate, which is as far as he could get, and she'd come down to the castle gate, which is as far as she could get out, and they'd talk a bit and make sure she was okay. Now one day, while Mordecai was hanging out at the castle gate, waiting around for Esther, he overheard a plot by two of the king's closest servants to kill King Ahasuerus. Fortunately, Mordecai had access to people who had access to the king's ear, namely Esther. And he told Esther about this plot, and Esther went and told the king about this plot, and the king was grateful, and he made sure that Mordecai's name was written down in the official record books, as somebody who had done a great service. And around about this same time, there was another person who was rising through the ranks of this great empire, a man named Haman the Agagite. Not sure if you're called an Agagite, you really want to go around advertising that. But anyway, this was Haman. And he was growing in wealth and growing in power and growing in influence. And he was kind of a bit full of himself. He really liked being a powerful person who had lots of stuff that he could show off, and where as he came, everybody knew, here's Haman the Agagite, he's coming. Everybody's bowing and scraping before him. Everybody except a certain Jewish man named Mordecai, who tended to hang out at the king's gate. So Haman's coming along in great procession, and everybody's bowing and scraping. Oh, wow, it's Haman. Look, he's this great, amazing of kingly official with all this power. Let's bow down to him and honor him. And Mordecai's just sort of standing there. Oh, hi, Haman. See you. And Haman was furious. He was really, really mad that this man, who was he again? Mordecai, the Jew? This man was not bowing down to him like everybody else was. And so Haman decided that he wasn't just going to take out Mordecai. No, that's small stuff. He was going to take out Mordecai and all of Mordecai's people.
That would include the king's wife.
Good observation. That would include Queen Esther. But of course, the king doesn't know that at this point. So he goes to the king and he says, "My lord, there's this group of people in your land, all throughout your land, in fact, who don't obey the same laws as all the other subjects. They're a threat. They're a danger. We need to make sure that they're taken care of. And it's okay. I'm going to take care of them for you. All I need to do you to do is sign this document here. I'll give you 10,000 talents of silver and well, do you just let me handle it?" And the king was like, "Oh, that sounds like a good deal. 10,000 talents of silver, and Haman handles this dangerous, seditious group of people in our midst. Awesome. Signed. And Haman now has the authority to do anything he wants with God's people." And so what he does is he sends out letters. He wants to take them all down at once. So he sends out letters to all the cities throughout all of the kingdom that on a certain day, anybody who wants to can go into anybody's who is Jewish's house, anybody who was a member of the people of God, and just take anything they want and kill them. And Mordecai gets hold of a copy of this edict, because it's being published all over the empire. And obviously, he's very, very, very upset and distressed. He rends his garments and puts on sackcloth and ashes, which is the sign of mourning in the ancient world. And because he's in sackcloth and ashes, he can't actually show up at the gate of the king's citadel anymore. He can only go, like, to a further part further down. And Esther's wondering, what's going on here? Where's Uncle Mordecai? He didn't come to see me today. And then the next day, he didn't come to see me. And the next day. And finally, she hears that he can't come into the palace because he's wearing sackcloth. Something horrible must have happened, but I can't talk to him because I can't go out of the palace. So she sends word down to him she sends clothes to him, actually. Here's some nice clothes. Put on some nice clothes and come to the palace and please talk to me. And Mordecai refuses. He's in mourning because he's praying and asking God to help. And he's not going to interrupt that, but he does send a message back to Esther along with the decree. This is what's going to happen. Go talk to the king.
Tell him you're Jew and that Haman technically signed your death warrant.
And tell him that you're a Jew. No, so go talk to the king. And Esther sends word back that the king hasn't actually asked to see me for a whole month. And you remember Vashti, right? The king has an edict that no one who is not invited into his presence can come before him. Unless, if they do, if he extends his golden scepter to them, that's the only way that somebody who is uninvited, who comes into the king's presence, will be allowed to live. Anybody else who comes into the king's presence, if he does not accept, if he hasn't invited them, and he does not extend his golden scepter, is taken away and killed. That would include me, I'm pretty sure, because that's what he would have done to Vashti. And Mordecai says to her, sends word back, because they have to communicate by messenger at this point, sends word back, how do you know if your life will be spared? You are one of us. The king doesn't know at this point that you are one of us, but he may, and at that point, you too will die. Think about it. Maybe it's for this very reason that you have come into this position. Maybe it's this very reason that God has given you this power, you this potential, you this authority, you this access to the king's presence. Maybe this is why God has given you all this stuff. And Esther sends back word to her uncle Mordecai, please get every Jew in the city to please pray and fast for me for 3 days, and then I will go into the king's presence. So all the Jews in the citadel of Susa, the great capital city of the empire, fast and pray for 3 days for Queen Esther. And after 3 days, Queen Esther puts on her royal robes. And knowing that this could be, that she could be walking to her death, she goes into the royal throne room and stands there in the presence of the king. And King Ahasuerus looks up from whatever boring royal duties he was attending to at that moment and sees, oh, beautiful Esther. I haven't seen you for a long time. Here. And he extends his golden scepter. And he says, I will give you anything you want, even up to half my kingdom. And Esther says, thank you, my lord. I want only one thing. I would like you and your great official Haman to come and eat with me. Private banquet. And the king's like, oh, that sounds great. And Haman thinks, this is awesome. I just got a dinner date with the king and the queen, just me alone. This is great. So she comes, so he and the king and Haman are there, and she serves them a nice meal. And the king is again just delighted with this amazing woman who is his wife. And he says to her, I will grant you anything you wish, any request. And she says, I just want one thing. I want you and Haman to come back again tomorrow for another banquet just like this one. Now Haman's like, whoa, I've made it. I am so important. I'm the invited guest not once, but twice of the king and queen. He goes home and he's feeling so great, and there's Mordecai at the gate. And Mordecai doesn't bow to him. And he is furious. He's so mad, he gets all his family together and says, you know what? I've got all this wonderful stuff, and none of it is worth anything to me as long as this man Mordecai is alive. And so they say, well, no problem. You have lots of power, right? You can put Mordecai to death. You've even got that king's signature on that amazing document. Just build a great gallows for Mordecai. And he's like, oh, that's a great idea. So he builds this great gallows to hang Mordecai on next morning. And it's 50 cubits high. So like, again, right? Here's a cubit. That's pretty high. He wants to hang Mordecai, put him to death in the sight of all the people of the city. That night, the king couldn't sleep. And so he does what I guess he might have always done when he couldn't sleep. He had people just go through the nice, boring royal record books for him. You know, this will put me to sleep. And as they're going through the royal record books, they come to this record of Mordecai and how Mordecai foiled that plot against the king's life. And the king is like, has anything been done to reward Mordecai? Like, no, not really. So he invites Haman in. Haman, he says, what should be done for the king that the man delights to honor? Haman is feeling great because the king has just invited him in, and now he's asking him his advice, and he's asking what the king should do to honor the man who he delights to honor. That must be me. And so he says, oh, let's see, what would I like? I would love it if I was led through the city by one of the high royal officials. And I would love it if I was led through the city on one of the king's own great horses. And I would love it if I was dressed in the king's rich royal robes. And so he tells the king, this is what you should do for the man that you delight to honor. Thinking, this is what the king is about to do to him. And the king says, oh, that's great advice, Haman. I would like you to be the very official who leads Mordecai through the streets, dressed in my royal robes, and shouts out to everybody, this is what is being done to the man that the king delights to honor. So Haman has to go and get his hated enemy, Mordecai, and dress him up in the king's royal robes that he really wants to wear himself, and put him on the king's great horse and lead him through the city, shouting to everybody who can hear, this is what is done to the man whom the king delights to honor. And he goes home and he's so totally humiliated. And his family are like, this is bad. But you have this upcoming great banquet with the king and queen. Again, it's okay. And so Haman goes to the banquet, still fuming at Mordecai, but it's okay because tomorrow he's going to hang him from that gallows that he had built 50 cubits high. And he's got this wonderful banquet coming up with the king and his delightful, beautiful queen. And again, Esther entertains. Again, she puts on this great banquet. And again, King Ahasuerus is delighted with his beautiful, lovely wife. And again, he says, my dear, you really need to give me, you know, a better request, a bigger request. I'll give you whatever you wish for. And Esther says, "My Lord, I wish only for one thing, my life. And my request is simple. My people have been sold. And if they were sold into slavery, that would be but a small thing. But they have been sold to be put to death. And I along with them." And King Ahasuerus says, "What? Who would dare do that to my beautiful, lovely queen and to her people? Who would do that?" And she points over to the guy sitting on the couch right next to the king. It's Haman. And Haman is like, "Ah! No!" And the king is so mad, he gets up and he storms out of the room. He doesn't know what to do. He's just so angry. Who would do that? Haman would do this to his wife and to her people? And Haman is like, "Oh, it's desperate. What do I do?" And he goes over to Queen Esther and he falls down on kind of on top of her and he's pleading for his life. And the king comes back and now he sees Haman assaulting his wife. He's absolutely furious. And the king has asked, "What should I do to this evil man, Haman, who has dared to so insult my wife, who has dared to put my wife, want to put my wife and her people to death?" And his servants say, "Well, actually, there's this really handy 50-foot high gallows that has been built recently." And the king decrees that Haman is to be hung on this gallows. And that his house and all that he has is to be given to his queen, Esther. And the queen gives them in return to her uncle Mordecai. And asks her husband, King Ahasuerus, for one more favor. He's in a bit of a bind, King Ahasuerus, because according to his own law, he can't actually revoke a decree that he makes. But she says, following her uncle Mordecai's advice, "Can I just get, you know, your authority to give a decree?" And he says, "Of course, my dear, of course, anything you want." And so she has Mordecai send out a royal decree that all of the Jews, all of the people of God, on this day on which Haman has arranged for anybody who wants to come and attack and to kill them, have the king's royal permission, royal authority, to take up arms, to take up weapons, and to defend themselves, to gather in a safe and defensible place, and to protect themselves against their enemies. And now, not only do God's people have official permission to defend themselves, they obviously have the king's royal approval backing them. And so when the day comes, instead of their enemies killing them, slaughtering them, and taking all their stuff, they defend themselves vigorously and effectively, and all of their enemies are killed and destroyed. And they continue in safety, in security, in prosperity. Esther continues as the queen of the land. Mordecai is now in Haman's great position. And God, through the bravery, through the courage of his handmaiden Esther, saves his people. The one thing that I want to leave you with, the one thing I want you to listen to tonight, and think about as we consider Esther and her bravery and her courage, is what is it? What stuff has God given to you? Because God has given all of us many things. It might be beauty. It might be talents. It might be knowledge, might be money, It might be anything that you can use to help, to influence, to do something good in the world for those around you. And He has given you this position, this relationship, this gift, this talent for a reason. For the time, for the place that you are in right now. And He wants you to have courage. Have the courage of Esther. Be willing to use the stuff that He has given you for whoever needs help, whoever is in need of assistance, whoever is in need of somebody to defend them, to speak up on their behalf. And if you have that courage, then all of the stuff that God has given you will serve the purpose for which God has given you. You will serve the purpose for which God made you. You will find fulfillment, and in that fulfillment, you will find blessing and courage and love and meaning. And you, like Esther, will be servants of the Most High God, to His glory, the glory of the Father and of the Son and of the Holy Spirit.